Hey, Cops is filmed live. Yeah. I was going to say before a studio audience. No, Cops wasn't filmed before a studio audience. No, in case you're wondering, yep, we are debuting a new kind of an offshoot of the regular show. It's Sleep Times Overtime.
That's right.
Where we can, it's basically a house show where we can go in deep dive and go into things in more detail. Sky Cameron is here. Somali to stars. He's got all the stats and news. So this, we're going to go deep dive into things that we can't usually talk longer about at the live show. So I figure it'll be a nice little offshoot. And
what are we calling this new venture?
Well, I just said Sleep Times
Sleep
Overtime.
Sleep Times Overtime. Okay.
Because we're going to go Sleep Times Over Overtime. That's not going to work.
I said the Sleep Times Over Overtime. And Captain Over. That's a lot of overs.
Right. Shot an airplane. But we have to address, though, in all seriousness, the reason why we haven't been on the show. We haven't had a show for the last 2 weeks, and we canceled the Pine and Jigger show as we have to, as we record tonight. The officers that went down in that horrific 2 Sundays ago, it's been, that it happened off Diamond Head, and rest in peace to Officers Kalama and Enriquez, and I guess we will say that we have a friend of the show that was touched very deeply, the ex-husband of Tiffany Enriquez, John Andrew, friend of the show. He's been part of the live audience before. We've known him for quite some time. We've known the family for quite some time. And just shout out to him.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers go out to you, man.
Thoughts and prayers out to you and your family. Just horrific situation. I'm sure everyone that's listening to this knows that in detail. So funeral for Tiffany was today as we record this. Today is Thursday, January 30th. And also, shout out to Kobe Bryant, a hero, legend, tragedy again on a Sunday. Horrific. Rest in peace to Kobe Bryant. And rest in peace to daughter Gianna.
And the other people on the
helicopter. And the 7 others. I mean, it just, I don't know. Like, we don't want to start things on a downer, but we have to address things that took place, why we haven't been on the air. A lot of heavy stuff has been happening. A lot of stuff's been happening strangely on a Sunday. Yeah, it's strange
doing the show and not mentioning it, you know? It's been in the conversation.
It's affected us locally and nationally, both stories. Mm-hmm. So we have to, and we have personal ties with these stories to begin with as well. So yes, our thoughts and prayers are to all of you. And new show will be February 4th. Next live one will be with Astro Guillotine, who's got a new album.
That's right.
Leo, I believe, is the new album. And everyone's favorite, Jamal Kilowatts, has returned. Conspiracy theories galore is the theme of his talk. That's going to be this Tuesday, so I don't know what he's going to say. Who knows what that guy's going to say. Last time he was mentioned on the show, he was mentioned for having a big dick. So who knows what kind of debauchery. I wonder what would happen if we mentioned that to him. Yeah, like, because he probably doesn't know that we mentioned that. And if I was like, so Jamal, you know.
But we've had Cavett and Justin Park both tell that same story.
Yeah. But I don't know if anyone's told it to him in person. I don't know if he knows this in person. So it might backfire.
He's going to whip it out?
1, he might whip it out. 2, he might get weirded out. I don't know what he's going to react to that.
Shout out to Jamal.
You know?
And Kilowatts, his mongoose.
Wherever you are. Because Kilowatts doesn't talk about sex or anything. So I don't know. Tune in, huh, everyone?
Yeah, that's going
to. I might ask that.
Regardless, it's going to be exciting.
It should be fun.
It'll be fun.
So what's on the agenda here?
So, you know, a couple of weeks back, we had talked about, you know, Bad Boys, obviously Bad Boys for Life, the third installment in the Bad Boys movie series, came out and broke box office records for January 2020.
Right.
Now, when I was talking to you about this, you had mentioned, you know, I never watched either Bad Boys movies.
That was the swerve. And yes.
It was a swerve. I was surprised just being that those movies are tied very much into the cultures that we enjoy, you know,
action films,
you know, hip hop, it has a hip hop tie in, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Very loose hip hop tie in, right? But
to say the least,
but you know, it did have a hip hop soundtrack, which you actually claimed you owned.
Mercy, Mercy, right? Mercy. Shy Guy.
That's right.
Diana King.
Diana King, man. Yep.
And then what else was on there? What else was on there?
We also had the hit song from the 69 Boys. Here They Go, Here They Go.
Hey, that's right.
Here They Come, Here They Come.
Right. Here They Come, that's right.
5-0.
Here They Come, Here They Come.
Yeah.
Woo, woo.
Yeah, right, that's right.
Kale knows that song. Kale knows the song.
There was, I believe, a Warren G song on there.
There was?
Yeah, there. It was an all right soundtrack.
Let's pull this up.
I'm going to mention a little. We'll talk about we'll go into the soundtrack soon.
Okay.
But I wanted to just, you know, ask you really quickly why it took you so long, or what was the refusal to watch these movies? Because they were in the cultural conversation. Everybody saw them.
Everybody saw them. Everybody knew all about it.
Okay.
Videos galore of music videos galore.
And these were huge songs. Hits.
Right. Bad Boys, we get it. Martin Lawrence, huge. Will Smith, getting there. Because he was getting from Fresh Prince. I think based off what I was thinking about, I thought about this today as, well, we'll reveal what I did today in a bit. But in 1995 was the year this movie came out.
Right.
So I'm thinking, what was I doing in 1995 that led me to not want to watch this movie? And I came up with two things. One, being a hip hop guy.
Okay.
And being heavily invested in the hip hop stuff of 95. Because we just came off of 94, which is a heavy hitter, 94 year. Biggie album, Nas album, you know, hip hop number one, East Coast number one.
Right.
And then 95 had more guys coming out.
Right.
And it was just a bigger roster of people all coming out with stuff. West Coast too.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow, this is hip hop can't get any better than this. Wow, this is great. And I was kind of like sticking to my guns of underground hip hop stuff, where this was looking as a mainstream, and I thought it was too mainstream for me.
And also it looked pandering. Maybe pandering to
it looked like hip-hop the pop crowd. Audience.
Or, you know, hey, hip-hop guys, here's your cop movie.
Here you go, yes. Here come the two black guys. Here, get ready, everyone. Hip-hop movie. And I think I was anti that. I was anti the pop.
Makes sense.
Pop-ish black exploitation movies of 1995.
Right.
Keeping myself underground, keeping myself the J. Rudy Damager and the Nunts.
Right.
And I think that's one reason. And two, I was single then. And usually I only... Ooh, I don't officially say this. Usually, only when I go to movies in the theater, if it's with a girl, and it's sometimes not to watch the movie. So, I didn't have a girlfriend in 1995. Because of that, I did not go to the theater in 1995 as well. So it just came and went, and I was just sticking to my hip hop and single mentality. I think. I'm going to say I'm 90% sure it was those reasons that led me to not go and bypass the thing.
You're a pop culture rebel. You were in a way. I mean, you know, you're sticking to your guns, man. I was such a pop culture whore. I just bought into everything.
Well,
I was a fashion victim.
Spread the legs out, bro. But I'm just
Skechers and Coda and all kind of terrible clothes.
Skechers.
Get it was terrible. I was ashamed, man. I don't like seeing.
Well, the clothes situation was it's a weird situation.
'90s was bad.
It's '90s.
We're gonna go into the fashion in these movies too, man.
But that was it.
One is some bad fashion,
right? But then, so that's why. Okay, so now we go back to I didn't watch it in '95, but then I watched it today.
Right.
I spent the entire day watching before this show airs.
Back to back.
Right. I was like, I'm determined to watch these movies. Before we do this show, I said I'm gonna take care of it. You had your doubts. I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had the time. It was just the cards. I was lucky enough to have this block of time free. Knock them out. So 8 o'clock in the morning, this started. Bad Boys 1.
Right.
Watch this at 8 in the morning.
Oh, jeez.
Okay.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself because I want to give you stats.
Right. I'm not gonna go into, but just watching this, I had to put myself back into my 1995 persona because I cannot watch this as a 41-year-old guy, because I'm going to obviously see things I didn't see, you know, look at it differently.
Right.
I need to watch it at a time context. So that's my angle for how I watched it this morning.
Okay.
So
you didn't go in watching this mad, right? You tried to come in with an open mind.
No, I I was determined to watch it one, and I was like, you know, if I'm going to do this, I just got to really be vested in it. So I had the time frame to do so. So I'm just like, you know, I'm going to sit down, hang out, watch this damn thing. And I kept trying to keep a level head. So that's where we're at as far as the getting the build up to watching this. So what are the stats here for? All right.
Well, you know, basically you remember a super popular genre called the buddy cop genre. We all remember the buddy cop genre. It exploded in the 80s.
Yeah.
Right. We had 48 Hours. We had Lethal Weapon. We had Tango and Cash.
Turner and Hooch.
Turner. I guess that's a buddy cop movie. I guess Midnight Run.
Harvey Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Was Red Heat. No? Stakeout.
I mean, Red Heat.
Yeah. The Hard Way with Michael J. Fox and James Woods.
That's right.
Yeah, man. Tons of movies in the 80s. And it kind of jumped the fence in the early 90s with a really... I didn't mention Running Scared. Which is actually one of the inspirations to make this movie was Running Scared.
Really?
You know, they wanted people, two actors that you wouldn't see as cops become cops, you know? So Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines at that time, that was crazy stunt casting.
Yeah.
You know, because we were like, oh, we got a trained ballet dancer, Gregory Hines.
That is correct, yes.
Tap dancer, ballet dancer.
Tap and extraordinaire.
We got, you know, the king of Jewish comedy and, you know, Billy Crystal.
Was he a Saturday Night Live by then?
Saturday Night Live.
They pulled him in for a year, right? The
Fernando. Remember Fernando's Hideaway?
He was good as Saturday Night
Live. You look marvelous.
That was great.
Yeah.
That was great.
One of the best ones was with him and Hulk Hogan. Yeah. Remember? That was a great one.
Yes, yes.
But I don't know if you remember... There was a terrible 90s movie called Loose Cannons with Dan Aykroyd and Gene Hackman. And it's a buddy cop movie where Dan Aykroyd is a schizophrenic, multiple personality schizophrenic cop.
Yeah, it's a stretch for Danny. But I do not remember this at all.
We should maybe watch this on one of our crappy movie nights.
Shitty movie night, let's go.
It essentially kind of killed the buddy cop genre for a long time.
I don't remember this at all.
Because it just jumped the fence and it was a commercial and critical flop.
Well,
so between then up until 95, you know, Bad Boys was this attempt by the producers, Jerry Bruckheimer and Don Simpson. Don Simpson, rest in peace, the cocaine king, I heard.
All right. A lot of cocaine in Bad Boys 1.
He did his nostrils did as much producing as
Was that dedicated to him in the movie? Because there's cocaine everywhere in this movie.
I wonder if he was still alive. But
homage to him?
Yeah, I don't know, but. You know, the original script was commissioned by Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, around that 92, 93 time.
Right.
And it was originally set to star Dana Carvey and John Lovitz.
Okay, that I read about. Yes.
Right.
That's insane. That's insane.
Dana Carvey, who had just left SNL in 93.
Right, so he was hot property.
He was super hot property. Studios were giving him, like... They're offering him movie roles.
Yeah.
You know, multiple networks are offering him his own show.
Yeah.
And then we know how that went. He made some terrible movies, Opportunity Knocks and
Dana Carvey Show.
Disguise. And then he had Dana Carvey Show, which was
it didn't work.
Such a flop that they actually made a documentary about it, right? Yeah. Too Funny to Fail. It's on Hulu. Check it out. John Lovitz was like kind of not doing much. You know, he left SNL back in 1990.
Yeah. He didn't take off.
And Dana said the script wasn't good, and he asked for rewrites, and then it just kind of didn't work out, and then other opportunities arose, and the project just kind of went on without them, you know?
So were the rewrites what the script is now?
So some of the rewrites, Dana Carvey's claiming that some of his suggestions to the script are actually still used in in the version that was made.
Got it.
But, you know, they're not giving him any screenwriting credit or story credit. You know what I mean?
Got it.
You know how that goes.
Of course.
But basically, they were looking for, you know, two hot actors. Martin was, at that point, at the apex or the peak of his popularity, right? Martin was a top-rated show on Fox. Def Comedy Jam ratings was through the roof.
Right.
Def Comedy Jam was the most influential stand-up scene at that time that we can remember. It was remember how comedians in the 80s said, you know, I go on the Tonight Show and I'm set for life. I get that one shot with Johnny Carson. I get that 5-minute thing. Oh, I get a sitcom. I'm going to make money. And it happened for a lot of guys, but not a lot of black comedians made that.
Right.
And Russell Simmons made that platform and it would make a star overnight. Chris Tucker went on there and became a star overnight.
Well, we got to touched the point that we weren't used to growing up seeing these stand-ups swearing profusely like did. So it that was a wild, shocking situation. Man. And talking about sex and swearing a lot, we didn't see that because The Tonight Show didn't allow that. So
and they had big to make change. The maximum impact because they only had about a 6-minute, 7-minute set.
Right.
You know, you only had, what, 3 comedians per Def Comedy Jam?
Right. We never seen that before.
No, it was wild, man. Like, it was an event. Like, we would go home and rush to it. So Martin was super hot. They eyed Martin first, and it was Martin. They were like, who do you want to partner with? And it was Martin was the one that kind of said, hey, let's take a look at Will Smith.
Now, did they have relations before?
From what I read, no. They might have met each other in passing, but there wasn't any real friendship. But they respected each other because of the hard work they were putting in as far as, you know, they're both on their own sitcoms. They were both, you know, at that point assisting. I'm not sure Will Smith was helping to produce Fresh Prince at that time, but he was, you know, very much involved, right? And so I think Martin respected that and, you know, brought him aboard.
Well, wise choice.
And Martin Lawrence is the top biller. And I don't know how Martin feels. Maybe that's why he's sleepwalking in these other movies that Will Smith now is top billed.
Well, I mean that's what led to him going crazy, right?
Sure. I mean, that's pure speculation, right? I mean,
well, I'm not saying Will Smith specifically, but the second one, when we get to that one, that's when he goes crazy on the street and yells at everybody and goes nuts.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah.
So he kind of took a downward spiral
in like a foil bag to absorb heat so he can sweat out. And
I mean,
and he's like holding a gun and he's delirious.
He kind of went in the deep end.
So that just is wild, man. But and Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, these guys produced, you know, very influential movies, Top Gun, you know, Beverly Hills Cop,
right?
You know, Days of Thunder. And, you know, they had a slick kind of style to their movies, and they wanted to kind of bring that back with the cop genre.
Right.
So they hired Michael Bay.
There you go. That's right. This is his
directorial debut of Mr. Michael
Bay. Get ready. Yep.
Mr. Explosions and Upskirt
Blow
Shots.
Up
and
everything. Yep. Blow up, slow motion, skirt.
Camera spinning around in circles. Michael Bay, who at that time, I don't know if you know this, was directing commercials for Coca-Cola, the Red Cross, and was the guy behind the Got Milk campaign.
I can see the Got Milk thing being him. I want to see the Red Cross commercials, though. What kind of...
I don't know.
Somebody blowing up in the Red Cross? Wow. You need the Red Cross? Grenade.
It would probably explain his obsession with doing slow-mos of helicopters in the sunset.
No.
You know, flying into the sunset or, you know, that...
The Red Cross flying in slow motion.
Right.
In the sunset, yeah.
Flying over the
delivering
ocean.
Bandages.
So, you know...
Thermometers.
They had a director in place. They had a script from screenwriter George Gallo and Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer producing. Take a wild guess of what they budgeted this movie at in 1995.
$69 million. Sorry, I just wanted to get that one out.
It looked fairly expensive, right? Look, production quality.
You got things blowing up here. You
pretty
got
damn good, right?
It's a sleek music video style looking movie.
$19 million to make that movie.
That's pretty good.
Inflation now, I would say to make that movie now in 2020.
Now 69.
It's a $150 million movie probably. Or
that much inflation? I guess so.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. We're gonna go into the latest one cost.
All right.
But yeah, $19 million. $19 million. So we'll go into what's your initial thoughts on the film, and then we'll go into plot points and everything. Should I set up the plot and then you kind of talk about?
No, I think we. I think I'm the only one late to the party on this plot, so I get it. It's, you know, back to cocaine again.
Let me just give a synopsis for. I doubt anybody listening to this. Why would you be listening to this if you haven't seen Bad Boys? You probably just want to torture yourself or
probably
you like
right?
the sound of our voices. But I seriously doubt.
Good luck on that.
But basically, the movie revolves around lifelong friends and partners. Marcus Burnett and Mike Lowry. Right?
That fucking
Marcus
name.
Burnett.
Say something.
Martin Lawrence and Mike Lowry.
Fucking Mike Lowry.
Lowry.
Fuck that shit.
The Miami detective investigating $100 million of seized mafia heroin, which was stolen from a secure, I wouldn't say secure, but secure police vault. Anyways, Internal Affairs suspects that it's an inside job and threatens to shut down their entire operation unless they recover the drugs within 5 days. This movie takes place in 5 days.
Oof.
The movie's so choppily edited. It looks like it could be 2 weeks.
It was a long 5 days. So, okay.
All right.
Great on the synopsis of this one. Well, going into this, and I'm thinking 95. Okay, so the imagery, the cinematography is very 90s, very 95-ish, very like, yeah. If you compare it to like a Point Break,
Miami.
If you compare that kind of a style,
great,
you know,
shots of Miami,
a lot of shadows, sunset, mm-hmm. sun, you know, So that it's sleek. I get it. It's a slick production. You can tell Michael Bay's all over this thing. It's just the fact that Martin Lawrence, when given scripts, or I don't know what his delivery is, it's weird. It's just like he's hesitant to say what he's supposed to say on his script. So he's thinking, he's battling in his mind whether he should improvise a line or say the actual line, because there's a lot of weird pausing.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like he's trying to be too ghetto, or he's trying to be funny, and he's trying to mix all that shit, and it just doesn't come out.
So it's funny you say that. So Michael Bay hated the script.
Oh, there you go.
Will Smith and Martin Lawrence supposedly hated the script. So basically, they were in discussions all the time to punch up the dialogue. So they were actually creating scenes on the spot, and Michael Bay gave them multiple takes to improvise while the cameras were rolling.
Right. Well, they can keep on rolling, because Martin Lawrence, good Lord. I mean, he really, this is the beginning of the end for him, because his performance in this was garbage. It was total garbage. And this is the performance that started the career for Will Smith.
Now, I find his performance like a guilty pleasure, because he's hamming it up so much with eyes bugging out of his head.
That's why it's too much. Faces,
and he's hamming it up so much.
It's too much.
I just think it's hilarious, man.
So 2020 me is saying, fuck this shit. Martin Lawrence, come on. This is really bad. 1995 me, who's just only knowing Martin Lawrence so much, gets why this can be a hit. I get it. I get the bug eyes. I get the making the faces and all this weird shit. But it's just so evident that he just can't do these movie roles. Or I don't know. Even a cop. I'm just not even buying him as a cop. I just can't buy him as a cop. I can't. I would not be protected by Martin
Lawrence. Do you know who was originally the producer's choice to have as Martin Lawrence's partner? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Martin was suggested Will, right?
Right.
Arsenio Hall. What kind of movie would that have been?
I'd buy Arsenio Hall as a cop more than Martin Lawrence, though. I think because of Arsenio Hall's stature, of how his presence. I think I could see him as a goofy cop guy, but still, if he came to my house with his badge, I'd be like, all right, what do you need to know?
Right.
Martin Lawrence, I mean, get the fuck out of here.
You know what's also really funny about this movie is these guys have been promoted to detective already. They're out of their police blues.
Yeah, what?
And they're 23, 25 years old.
That made no sense at all.
I get it. It's a movie. People at home, take it easy. But it is hysterical that these guys are out of uniform already. They're narcotics detectives. It's the quickest promotion in Miami history. This has had to be the quickest promotion in Miami PD history.
They were shorthanded?
And they can wear sleeveless vests to work with a tank top?
Yeah, so are they undercover guys? Are they regular detective? Are they just the hip detectives?
They can wear, like, they can wear their badge with a gold chain.
Right, they come from a rap concert. I mean, like, that's the disbelief. You have to suspend disbelief. I got it.
This was also in the 90s where, you know, in 95, we weren't picking apart movies for realism. I think we weren't. So many movies where we've complained about realism, and so many directors now have tried to put realism at the forefront of their movies, like, oh, this could really happen and stuff. So in 95, we're watching this movie, and like, of course, sure, he's coming to work with Carl Kanion, and you know what I mean?
Well, you know what's funny, though, is this was filmed after Boys in the Hood. This was filmed after Juice. This was filmed after Menace to Society.
Right.
So we, as the quote-unquote hip-hop people,
right,
love those movies. We love the realism of those movies and how they taught us stuff we didn't know about as non-African-American people. But yet they go throw 95 comes out and throws Bad Boys out. That's kind of another reason why I didn't go to this movie.
Well, I would say...
Because of what we just said.
The movies that you said. Okay, so like Juice, New Jack City.
If we're talking about the black
Boys
movies.
Boys in the Hood. Right. But those movies, I'd argue, the fashion in those movies, with the exception of some of Wesley Snipes' suits in New Jack City, they fairly hold up. But you know what movies jumped the shark with the clothes? House Party 2. Remember that one?
Right.
Holy moly, man.
It was over the top.
It was clownish looking.
It was like a clownish over-the-top movie.
And so, and like with this one, and then we had all these other 90s, what they would label urban movies, right?
Right.
Urban comedies or whatever. Right. And the fashion was just awful, right? So we just kind of accepted it at that point, is that that's how Hollywood is dressing people.
Right. We should have taken a deeper look into this, because we were the same people cheering Boys in the Hood that are now, well, I didn't, but they're now in 95 cheering Bad Boys. There was no Boys in the Hood type of politically driven black movie in 95. They had their moment, And then Hollywood like, nope, fuck this. We don't want to portray the black guys this way. Let's go back to doing the exploitation bullshit. Because it's strange how it went from there. We thought from Boys in the Hood, we're going to get more real, what's really going on, black movies. A real cop movie involving two real black cops.
There was. And I think this, you know, well, I also think that what Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer was doing was giving basically the counterbalance. They were giving the counter entertainment to a lot of that. A lot of that heavier stuff that was going on. And I felt at the time in 95, like, I love that genre. I love Tango and Cash. But, you know, for ironic reasons, obviously, right? They're terrible, but they're crazy fun. Right. And when I watched this in the theater in 95, dude, I had a blast.
Right.
I had so much fun watching it. And I just thought it was, like, a ridiculous movie. But it was shot so well. Cinematography is so dope.
Right.
And the action scenes are actually pretty good.
No, I agree with all of you just said. I'm thinking maybe we think of it in this angle. Maybe because it was produced by the people they were, directed by the people they were, all white people.
Right.
Maybe they wanted to not look at color anymore. Right. And we're like, we're just going to make an action movie. We're not making a black action movie. We're just making an action movie, and we just bill it as an action movie. So we can look at it on the positive end here. See, I'm saying positive things. And we can look at it on the positive end here and be like, this is
myself.
We're marketing it as an action movie, not as... It's another New Jack City. Come on, black people. You got to go check this movie out. It's not a, you know, Tyler Perry.
Right.
Maybe that we can look at it in that sense.
Right.
See, that's a nice thing, right?
Well, so let's go into like a little bit of what makes the movie good and what makes this movie ridiculous, all right? So basically we have this, you know, elaborate heist at the police.
Gotta have
at
heist.
The police, the most like unguarded $100 million dollars of heroin I've ever seen.
Okay, you know, at 8 in the morning, seeing this,
and
okay.
And also, you're telling me that you guys have a huge air vent to blow out toxic fumes that just has easy access from the street? Okay, well, all right, we're going to just buy that one. Miami PD should have probably been shut down completely after that one.
Yeah, they partying, Miami.
They give them 5 days to stay open. So. Yeah.
No shutdown of any sort. No tape anywhere. No, let's just keep it going.
And
that was bad.
And then we got to say, so Michael Lowry asks his, you know, kind of love interest, I guess, the girl Max, who is murdered at the hotel, which no one is mentioning the fact that he's a police officer dating a prostitute. I mean,
it's Miami.
Also just widely accepted?
It's Miami. It's so Miami.
He asks her to look out for people that are newly rich,
you know, Luke
and
is
could
there.
Be yeah. suspects.
Yeah.
And she asks her friend, Julie Mott, played by Tia Leone.
All right, there we go. How's that? Does that sound all right, Kale? Yes. Tia Leone, I forgot about Tia Leone.
She was looking
good. Totally forgot about her, that she was in this.
Cute, raspy voice.
Okay, so how old is Tia Leone in this movie? Can we get the stat on this?
I don't think
because she did not age well.
Martin Lawrence is 23 and has 3 kids.
Well, you know.
Let's just talk about that, too.
Racial stereotypes for the win.
You know, so you were telling me he got hired by the Miami PD when he's 16 years old. He starts having a family.
He's one of those whiz kids.
He's promoted to
he's
detective by the time he's
23. He's a 90s whiz kid.
I kid. I mean, in this movie, he's maybe
look up
30 maybe.
Right.
But, you know, but he's got 3 kids. Cast. 3 kids and detective by 30. He's winning life. He's crushing
life. He's a 90s whiz kid. Let's look at the ages of these people.
So, Tia Leone is, she's born in 1966. She's currently 53.
Shit.
53 years old.
Okay, so we got to do the calculator. So, if it's 53 in 2020, then we got to go in 2010, she's 43. In 2000, she's 33. In 90, she's 23. So that means she is 27 years old, bruh. Public school math. So 27, she's looking great.
She's
looking fantastic.
Right.
I totally forgot about Tia Leone. And this was her big thing. This is it, right? She did like Jurassic Park or something.
She didn't do anything else
after this.
She did Deep Impact and she had the movie The Family Man with Nicolas Cage. Jurassic Park 3 that everyone kind of forgot about. And, you know, she's had a handful of different
stuff.
Married
to David Duchovny, right?
Married and then not divorced anymore. To him when he came out as a sex addict.
Tia, damn it.
Him and Eric Benet, man. What's wrong with these guys?
That's
great. They bag two of these hot women and then they just go, I'm a sex addict.
Eric Benet performing at Blue Note.
I know.
Guys, March.
Oh,
we get there, maybe.
Sex addicts.
Sex addicts, show up. Let's go. So, wow. I mean, that's an interview with Tia Leone. We got to ask her about the sex past of
and
David
then, you know, she went on to just, you know, having her own CBS TV show, Madam Secretary.
Right.
Probably only Wando's watched that one.
Yeah, Wando's got the box set somewhere. So, yeah.
Shout out to Wando.
Shout out DJ Lagerwitz. We know you have it, okay? We know you do. All right, but Tia Leone, shout out Tia Leone. She looked hot.
Yeah, this is really one of her debut roles, even though like
she's in a skirt the whole movie. Right. She's in a skirt the whole movie.
She's like scantily clad like the entire movie. You would think you're running away from murderous drug dealers. You might want to put some jeans on, but nah, she likes to feel that wind on her.
Right. Legs. She had that skirt short combination, the squirt. I think it was called,
right? Right.
She was ready for the club. She was ready for going clubbing.
And she's a photographer in the movie, I guess. Oh, she was doing. They never really talk about that.
I want to make a sandwich at that point.
But her best friend is a hooker.
Right, right. So they thought, yeah, that, you know, friends in low places.
I'm not trying to shame the escort industry here. Yeah, don't tease the hookers. I don't know. Yeah.
Trying to make a buck. Make that money, girl.
It's very strange to me, right? Well, so they basically get hired to a hotel by Eddie Dominguez, who's the crooked cop who helps the goons steal all this
heroin.
I
love the name goons. That's always a good...
Yeah. And then the weirdest odd mix of mobsters show up, right? Yeah. First we got, let's talk about Fouché, the Frenchman, played by Ketchy Cairo.
Wow. That's his name?
Cairo.
Ketchy Cairo.
Ketchy Cairo is a French actor. Right? I believe he was in La Femme Nikita, if I'm not mistaken.
Ketchy Cairo.
French family, La Femme Nikita movie.
How do you spell that? So Ketchy Cairo?
Chekey.
Ketchy Cairo.
And then his last name is Cario.
Ketchy Cairo.
Yeah.
Wow.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
No, that's like the Indian heavyweight champion or something like that.
And then he's got the goons, right? He's got the henchmen, right? He's got the big Italian guy.
Yeah, there's like an Italian guy. Like
and
another...
he got the little squirmy guy with the mustache.
Some
right?
Spaniard. And all kind of. It was a mix. It was like a Benetton ad. The mobsters.
It was just
the
goons, weird. Weird.
Right.
And then in the process, they kill Dominguez and they kill Max. And then Julie escapes. And then obviously she can survive a 20-story jump off of a high-rise into a
pool.
She's
got a skirt on. That's why, of course she can. If she was wearing jeans or something, I don't know. She can let it fly. I thought for a moment, because like you know how Michael Bay, he does the upskirt shots? Like,
you know,
she's running up the stairs, so you got to get the upskirt shot.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to see, like, you know, a thong. I was like, I was right. Tia Leone, let's go.
Did you notice in this movie, he's going up a ton of skirts?
Right. That's his thing, right?
It is his thing.
I was excited because of that, and I was like, oh, she's wearing a skirt. All right, screw it. Shit. So I had to go. So as that was going on, I Googled Tia Leone bikini. So I'm by myself. And yeah, she's got a lot of bikini shots on Google. Right. Tia Leone is like dressing up.
And
let's
so
pull that up.
Basically, the one of the only, I guess, plot devices that they've kept from the original script, the one that was intended for Dana Carvey and John Lovitz, was this new twist where she escapes. She calls the police station. Joe Pantoliano, Captain Howard. Right. Hey, shout out Joey Pants.
He's good. Right? Good. He gets a lot of work.
I think he's like the best acting in the movie, right?
Clearly.
And he basically forces Marcus Burnett to pose as Mike Lowry to talk to her and gain her trust. And so I guess the only plot point of the original was the switchover, right? These two guys with different lifestyles. They're basically switching places.
I can see Carvey.
One's a playboy. One's a family man. Right. I'm guessing Dana Carvey is the playboy.
It ain't Lovitz.
I'm sure of it. It ain't Lovitz.
Or they swerve us and it is Lovitz.
Can you see John Lovitz as Mike
Lowry?
Why,
yes, I'm a playboy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Acting. Yes, Mike Lowry.
Oh, God. Okay. Yes. Let's talk about Mike Lowry, the name. All
right.
So
one of the best names, right?
For the show, we have a group chat for the people that don't know. Okay, we have this group chat on IG where I just tell everybody that helps with the show like what's going on.
Yeah.
So I'm telling everyone, I've never seen Bad Boys before. So of course everyone's replying and chiming in with shit. What? And then so the Lord Flores, shout out. He goes, he just writes the two Mike Lowry.
Right.
So then I not seeing Bad Boy thinking. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean we're miking up Laurie, Honey Wahini, or who's Mike Laurie? And I'm saying, what the fuck does that mean? And he goes, just watch the movie. I'm like, all right, fine. So then when it first mentions Mike Laurie, I'm like, oh, fuck. Here we go.
And the name is mentioned over and over. And it becomes, honestly, like, to me and my friends, it became like cultural conversation. Like, we would just always... go Mike Lowry. Like, we would just, like, do that all the
time. Fantastic.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah. And then the way, like, Martin Lawrence is trying to be funny about it, and then they're on the Pantoliano's on the phone. Okay, yeah, we got him right here. Talk to him.
Right.
And he's doing, the
thing. He's like, how do I know this is Mike Lowry? Because I'm Mike Lowry.
Right.
I mean, it's shticky, but it was the humor at that time.
95.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember seeing, we saw this movie at Waikiki Twins.
Hey, shout out. That was a great theater.
Waikiki Twins Theater.
That was a great theater.
Theater ripping up in hilarity, man. Just loving it.
Because that wasn't around back then. 95 didn't have that kind of a shtick. It wasn't, the black comedy of that kind of style was fairly new. Yeah. Get it.
So people were love everything right. Martin was doing with the bug in his eyes out right. and the faces.
No one did that before, so I get it.
People are loving it. Right. People are loving it. So basically then, Julie identifies one of the henchmen. Then, right, like after Martin Lawrence gets her out of her apartment, remember they break in, they're right. shooting at him and everything like that. Martin Lawrence got to go save her dog.
Can I say some Mattia Leone's, Julie's apartment? It's yeah. a huge ass apartment.
It's huge.
I'm like, she's got a back end wing. Right. She's got a
photo
kitchen.
Be paying, bro.
Like,
photography be working.
Ain't nobody in art making money. Ain't nobody in creative pictures making money. But De Leone figured
well,
it out.
Well, her roommate is a high paid hooker.
That's right. The roommate's a hooker. Okay, forget it.
And then
forget
I think at one point, De Leone says to her, "Thanks for letting me crash at your place."
Also, you know, that's the hooker's place.
Yeah.
Now that makes sense.
There you go.
Because that was a huge, like, let's go to the back.
There's a scene where they're getting to the hotel. And she's saying, thank you for, taking care of me and letting me crash at your place. And I think that's the whole crux of that. Because
then they're trying to get the dogs, and then they open up the two doors, and there's more of the apartment in the back. Holy shit.
It's huge.
Miami. Right? Huh? Pitbull lives there now, probably. Wow.
And then basically Martin has to go and stay at Mike Lowry's apartment, which is, and then we find out at this point that...
It's another nice apartment.
Mike Lowry, Will Smith's character, is rich, why is he a cop?
And he's paying hookers.
Right.
How are you having a very nice condo?
I mean, this is like very nice, expensive condo.
Very, very how to be a player, Bill Bellamy-esque
big time.
Condo.
Yeah, big time.
Right? And,
very cliche. Right.
And he's got a cop salary, which what's a cop in Miami making like in 95?
I would say 50,000.
About, right?
Yeah.
Right.
If I had to guess. And so,
figure.
Supposedly he says, he argues with Martin Lawrence. Remember, he was like, am I supposed to, feel sorry or feel bad that my family left me all this money?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like.
So there you have it.
He's a rich guy, establishes that, and then, he's just in it for the adrenaline rush.
Right.
And
he's got the
justice.
Right. That's
and the puss.
Right. Like a true douche. But yes, he had the speedy car, and he has a great condo. Great flooring on the condo too. I like the flooring, very stone wall flooring. And then we gotta mention, we didn't mention the doorman. What was his name? Chet
the doorman, played by I have the cast list here. Savarino Guerrero.
Why do all these guys in this movie have like these weird names, this weird casting?
Well, they're probably casting
Savarino Guerrero.
They're casting a lot of Italians and Latinos because it's Miami.
I guess so. Right. But he didn't look Miami. He looked like Portuguese or something. This guy, Chet.
He is...
Savory.
Yeah.
Is that a Spanish name? Savory? Savory.
Saverio. S-A-V-E-R-I-O.
And his last name is
Guerrero.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess so. It kind of inspired performance by him. I don't know. It didn't really take off
he's
for
kind
him.
Of, he's kind of like... You can see he's trying to do a shtick.
Right.
He's trying to do that bumbling bellman kind of
shit. He knew this was his big break, so he's going to give it his all try and get a future casting to other...
Right.
He was like Dane Cook in that other movie we saw, that shitty movie with Dennis Rodman.
Oh, yeah, with Simon Says.
Simon Says. This is Dane Cook all over again.
Right, he's like hamming it up, right?
Trying to get jobs,
He probably was like an open mic comedian, and he was like, this is my shot!
I think so. Yeah, he had that kind of deal, too bad it didn't work out for him. But
they're over there, and then basically they go to Club Hell. Right? One of the Club Hell.
Was that the
everyone's
one
favorite club?
Was that the with the bodies hanging from the roof? Was that, am I
yeah, that's
the
one where
okay.
I think you might be blurring the lines, but okay. I think the one where they're hanging from the strings is the MDMA, like the ecstasy club in Bad Boys 2. I think that's what you're talking
about. Okay, right.
But this
bodies.
One, there were chicks in cages.
Okay, that's Bad Boys 1, yes.
Bad Boys 1, they're hanging in cages, there's fire.
It's been a long day.
Lucifer's there.
Okay, that's right, Lucifer's there, that's right.
Club Hell, it's Club Hell, right?
Club Hell, yes.
Everyone's in leather bikinis.
Right.
Or real chafy, it's very itchy.
Sinning as we speak.
Right? And it's tons of upskirt shots again.
Right, Michael Bay. Good job, bro.
And then we have what leads to the big, bathroom brawl with Martin Lawrence, right? And then leads to a car chase with a truck full of ether that's just sitting out in front.
Okay.
And the ether is going to be used to process the heroin to, I guess, cut it, I guess? I don't know, but...
Don't you need to heat it up or something?
Yeah, so they're using the ether to heat it.
How do I know that? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know all this
process. But they have to heat it up to do something, right? Is that right. The ether's for?
That's what basically they're doing. They're like basically cooking it, I guess, and processing it. I don't know how heroin's made, okay, guys. So I'm sorry. I didn't do that research.
There you go. Shout out politically correctness. In 1995, though, did we know as kids in 1995 what ether was? I'm looking back. I'm thinking back as 95 Aaron would be.
I don't know what ether is now.
Isn't it just fuel of some sort?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, isn't it like fire? Right here. I could look it up.
Yeah, we got computers here. I just looked up Teo Leone in a bikini. I should look up ether, for God's sakes.
Well, shit. But you know what? The point that we're trying to make is we got a truck full of ether parked out in front
of
a nightclub, right? Ether. And then just to establish to us, the audience, how dangerous ether is, the guy lights up a cigarette, and then the other guy slaps it out of his head, and he's like, it's ether, you moron!
Yeah, that was good.
You'll explode, right?
That got
just
a laugh.
Just to let us know, the dumb audience go, oh, ether's bad.
Yeah. So I looked it up here. It is a pleasant-smelling, colorless, volatile liquid that is highly flammable. It is used as an anesthetic and as a solvent or intermediate in industrial processes, a.k.a. drugs. So there you go. Chemistry. Ether.
So we then leave canisters. The club, and we go on this, you know, car chase down a freeway that eventually ends.
Very Michael Bay.
And the only way they can get out is throwing the cans of ether at the car following them and shooting at it, which is something that at that point was pretty cool.
That's not bad. Yeah. That was okay. I was okay with that. That's fine. It makes sense. They're in the truck to throw it out. Got it. And then so they go from there.
They get away, but the news helicopter catches Martin Lawrence on the camera.
Right.
So his family, you know, he's telling his family that he's away in another state, right? For a subpoena, for a federal subpoena. And, you know, he has to pose as Mike Lowry.
Yeah. See, I don't like the whole switcheroo plot.
Lame.
It's like where people are playing this lie and they're playing up the lie throughout the movie. I hate the TV shows do that from the panel. I hate
that.
And
at one point, like, Taylor Leone is so invested in these guys, they could have just told her at any point, but they just kept lying. Like, where are you going to go?
But
you're going to die.
Right. It was overly done. Martin Lawrence is such a bad actor. He couldn't even ham that up right. And it was just constant lying, and then Will Smith with the wife, and then back and forth, and this shit. Who's the wife? Teresa Randall?
Teresa Randall I believe, some Spike Lee movies.
Yeah, she had a run.
She had a little bit of a run.
She had
run,
a run.
You know?
But
she was in Sugar Hill.
That's
she was
right.
in Beverly Hills Cop 3.
That's right.
She was in a Spike Lee movie. She was in Malcolm X.
That's right.
Yeah, so she was in...
She made some cash.
She was in Space Jam. I believe she was Michael Jordan's wife in Space Jam, wasn't
really?
She?
Really?
Or something. Something along that line.
Somebody had to play his wife, so yeah.
But yeah, man, so she's been working. She's been steady.
Well, it's just the bait and switch thing. Teresa Randall looks good in this movie, too.
Yeah.
She looks like, she's maybe like 29, 28?
She's out of Martin's league.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
But Martin's made a career out of having the girls out of his league. Just like
of
Adam
course.
Sandler, right? Adam
of
Sandler
course.
Always got to have the
right.
wife that's way out. Jennifer Aniston,
There's
Salma
no
Hayek.
Now.
You know
right.
what I mean? You name them. Kate Beckinsale, whatever. You
right.
know, whoever.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's that whole plot, though, of the whole we have to keep this lie going. And good job, Tia Leone, for playing off that she kind of gets it and she knows already
she
that these guys are full
timing.
Of shit. She played it well here. So
she's
I'm surprised she didn't take off because she did a good job of that.
Yeah.
We kind of were in on the joke with Tia Leone.
This movie did jumpstart her career, but I would argue just the roles she chose, you know, just weren't that memorable. And then she just kind of got, you know, forgotten, you know what I mean? Like,
that's too bad.
You know, because you got to figure the Lex movie she did right after this was Deep Impact. And that movie, even though it made money.
That made money, right?
You know, it was people don't even remember she's in that movie.
Right.
Let alone remember that movie besides the tidal wave hits.
That's all I remember. I don't think I've seen that either. Let's not do a Deep Impact show.
No. Yeah, we'll do a Deep Impact versus Armageddon show.
Right, I can't do that. I can't. I'm already
Armageddon,
tired
directed
today.
By Michael Bay.
That's right.
But anyways, can we also mention basically Mike Lowry and Burnett, Marcus Burnett, go to see their informant, Jojo, Michael Imperioli from The Sopranos.
Wow.
In one of his early movie roles, just post Goodfellas, you know, goes
right.
Goodfellas in the 90s.
Right.
He was in small stuff here and there.
Right.
You know, he was in some Spike Lee stuff as well. But, you know, then we've got the complete, you know, breach of, you got the good cop, bad cop scene where Will Smith pulls the gun out. And he goes, I'm going to shoot you in the head. Through
right.
that whole cliche scene, right? Then he tells him, you know, where the location of the chemist is that's cutting all the drugs for
I was watching that part. This was when I was. This was my sandwich break. Right. Just letting everybody know. I stood up from the couch and I decided to make a sandwich.
Right.
So I was still watching. I can still watch from my side view. But yeah, this was the this moment because I vaguely recall.
Right.
This moment you're mentioning right
and
now.
And then also we'll mention the scene that that was said that was completely improvised by Martin Lawrence and Taya Leone was the scene where she kind of realizes that Marcus Burnett is Will Smith. You
know what I mean? They're lying on the bed.
They're not. And then she's like trying to flirt with him to have sex with her. Right. And then she insinuates that he might be gay.
You sound like a married guy or gay. Right. Great. And that's great comedic timing by Taya Leone.
I think that's one of the funnier scenes in the movie.
She did a great job on that.
Martin Lawrence does that line. He goes, "You feel all the dents in the bed? It's because of all of this. Right. Because I gets down." That's a pretty good line, man.
That was a good line for the time. But yes, that was a good comedic timing scene.
A little homophobic too, all right? Like
yes. There was that too.
But
there was a lot of things going on in 95.
It was hip hop culture, man. So anyways, we'll cut to the grand finale. They basically track down the chemist to the building. Oh, we have to mention the foot race that takes place when they finally come to Mike Lowry's apartment and try to kill them and grab Taya Leone's character, Julie. And they and then
because Will that was Smith, the big reveal. That was
Will
the reveal
Smith
scene.
And Martin Lawrence then pursue them on foot.
Right. Everybody knows everybody.
I think it's
now.
The best action scene in the whole movie.
Martin Lawrence running was.
It looks hilarious.
That was, I don't know what was going to happen there.
It looked hysterical.
That was not one take. That had to have been multiple takes.
He jumped on the top of the cab.
He jumps on the cab. He slides on the cab roof. All this shit. That was him? He did his own stunts?
Yeah. Well, he did that one. I mean, you see him face clearly jumping on the hood.
Yeah, I didn't have CGI. You know that was great back then to cover that up. But yes.
We got Will Smith.
Impressive.
We got Will Smith hauling ass.
Will Smith's always a great sprinter in scenes guy. He always looks like he's hauling ass.
Tom Cruise in the sense of
we
know his run. He has a very good run.
But you can tell Will Smith's jamming it. So he does good with the running scene.
Yeah. Both of these guys extremely thin in this movie, which also makes it very bizarre. Well, they're kicking a lot of big muscular guys' ass in the movie. And these guys are...
Well, they're 90s whiz kids. They're 20 and they're detectives. Yeah. So they can do anything they want. They can take down the Soles, take down the Italians.
So we would have to imagine that Martin Lawrence is about 30 years old in this movie, or 29 or something like that, and Will Smith's just slightly younger. In real life, Martin Lawrence now is 54, and Will Smith's 51.
Okay, that makes sense.
So So anyways, after that scene, we get the classic Michael Bay slow mo camera spin around them as they're taking deep breaths.
Right.
After Will Smith pulls them out of the way of the car.
They need that for the trailer.
Right.
They gotta put that for the trailer.
And then we go to the I love abandoned airplane hangars. They're always places for good drug deals.
That's
to go
what
down.
They, because nobody's there. You can hide the bodies,
and
hide
we
it
can
all.
Blow it up. We can blow this thing
blow
to
it
shit
up at the end, right? Fly out.
But it's always got to be in an abandoned hangar, abandoned warehouse.
Well, I mean, it's cheap, you know, for the budget.
I totally understand.
You know, $19 million budget hangar.
But you know, it'd be funny one of these cop movies where the villains go address like, yeah, maybe we should go meet in a more public space. So it, you know, what I mean, you know,
meet at the mall.
I don't know, just something that's not so. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's so funny.
Many movies happen in hangars.
Oh
that's just how it is.
Yeah.
It's just how it is.
Then we basically, you know, get like they get the backup from the SWAT team, right? But originally just the other two Latin cops.
The SWAT team always comes late.
Like their rivals.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So they're always picking at each other. They just always talk shit. Just telling mama jokes.
Right. And that whole shtick was getting tiring at the end. I'm like, come on. Like, no, we're not fucking with you guys. Come on.
But
okay,
that
we got
was
it now.
Clearly inspired by, you know, Rosewood and Taggart. In Beverly Hills Cop, and they were getting always ragged on by the other two.
There's
guys,
always the rival duo that wants to be them or is talking
shit. You're
not
going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
Exactly. Right. And then they're going to be the ones that first show up, and then Pantoliano.
Right.
He, of course, calls the SWATs. They never show up
on
time.
It's cliche after cliche after cliche. Right. But for me, it's like all working because this movie, to me, it's like, you know, eating a burger. It's like comfort food, you know? Nothing in this movie is going to surprise you. It's just all the things that you're like, oh, it's like a warm blanket with ether.
It's like Rise of Skywalker all over you.
With ether and explosions.
It's the same shit. It's fine. And it's because of those cliches that I think was what maybe going back to the earlier point of these three white people wanted to make a action movie without any color barrier.
Right.
So make this action movie as an action movie with all the cliches of what the previous ones have had.
Right.
But we just got two black guys this time.
Right.
Let's sell it as an action movie.
Right.
And that's why you're not going to see anything groundbreaking. They're keeping it safe. They're keeping everything safe.
And I'd say this is why Michael Bay became an in-demand action director after this movie. He made this movie for $90 million.
Right.
That's crazy to me.
That is a brilliant...
Because the movie looks expensive.
Right.
And that final action scene, man, they're blowing up every damn thing.
That's probably $17 million of the $19 right there. But he did a fantastic job, and that's what got him his... He catapulted, like Will Smith did after this movie, and justfully so for the budget.
And and it's funny now that, you know, they've been talking about, you know, the salary disputes between Martin and Will. And that was part of the reason why they couldn't get the movie, the new ones, off the ground.
Oh, right.
Was the salary dispute because, you know, Will Smith is like double the pay of Martin. And this time, Martin Lawrence was making double what Will was making.
Right.
Maybe triple what Will was making at this time. So, you know, it's crazy. So we get the car chase, right? You got to have the two cars, you know, the Porsche and the little Roadster.
Yeah.
On the runway.
Yeah.
Right. And then finally, like, you know, he's been ragging on Martin the whole movie. You can't drive for shit. You drive like a bitch.
Right.
Driving Miss Daisy. Right,
until now.
And then he finally, like, gets it there.
Right.
And
a lot of shotgunning going on. Mm-hmm. The car was inside the plane. So the car took off in the plane and shot out. Okay, that was a fun thing.
And they established the car very early on because the Colombian gangster, whoever this guy is, the generic Colombian gangster, basically he's like, this is my new toy.
And that guy reminded me of somebody. You know Salazar? Remember the guy Salazar from Fear the Walking Dead?
Sure.
And he was in Predator 2. I thought that was Salazar. I thought that was like a fatter, he really let himself go for this role, like to be in it, but it's not Salazar. And then he gets shot, and then Taylor Leone, who don't give no fuck, she's handcuffed to the thing.
Right.
She gets out of the handcuff.
Right.
How did she do that earlier? She was handcuffed through the whole movie. I guess she finally figured it out.
Yeah.
And then she drives the car into the abandoned airport. Guns blazing, on fire. She's
to
like,
save him. To save him. Right.
My MVP of this movie, Taylor Leone.
Okay, I like it. My MVP of the movie is Will Smith, and I only say MVP because this is right around the time of Independence Day.
Right.
And really, when we found out that Will Smith was going to be in a sci-fi movie and an action cop movie, we were clowning him.
Yeah.
Because we were like, man, what is Fresh Prince doing?
Because we know of him as that.
And then he's so magnetic on the screen as far as, like, he's charismatic.
Yeah.
You know, he can do the action, he can do the comedy, you know, he can deliver the lines. He's not hamming it up like Martin.
He delivered.
Man, you knew he was going to be a star.
Right.
You knew he was going to be a star.
He delivered where we weren't seeing it coming. Martin Lawrence stuck to his shtick that what got him there.
And then what did Will Smith do right after this? He do Men in Black. Makes him even a bigger star.
Right.
You know, what Martin Lawrence going to do Big Mama's House.
Exactly, because clearly he didn't have the range.
Well, it wasn't directly after, but you know what I mean? Like, Martin made a bunch of campy
movies, I didn't see any of that shit.
Like Nothing to Lose and
I did not see that.
Like Blue Streak.
I did not see that.
All these movies, right? Blue Streak's not bad. Dave Chappelle's in it.
Like, I'm telling you, I don't like Martin Lawrence now. I don't like him back then. Okay. I'm telling you, he's good as a stand-up. Martin, the show, for first two seasons, fine. But these movies... Come on. Clearly it shows right in this movie.
All right.
Clearly in Bad Boys. He has no business being in a movie.
So, credit rolls, man. So what's the mic rating on Bad Boys 1?
Three mics.
Three mics. This one.
It's fun.
Okay.
It's something that you have to take it for what it is. It's not going to be The Godfather. It's a fun movie. It's fine.
All right. It's fine. Yeah. All right. I give it. So it was funny. Back in 95, I probably gave it four mics
because I enjoyed it. I don't blame you.
Then. In 2020, I give it 3.5.
Okay.
I get 3.5 mics. I take the little bit off for the way this movie is crazily edited. You don't know, you know, one day to the next. And
yeah, they don't give you that time frame at all.
They don't give you a sense of like, this is 5 days. It
Not
feels like
all.
2 weeks in that movie.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And so, I'll give it 3.5. And then let's go to total gross. What do you think this movie made in North America?
It's got to make
$19 million budget.
Had to be way over like $150 million.
So it made $65 million in America, which is respectable. It's respectable.
I'm surprised.
$75 million overseas.
All right.
So we have a a total of $141 million.
Because you got all these Frenchies and Salazars and all these kind of savory glands and all these
it
names.
It did better overseas than in America.
As it should, because you got the Cubans watching it, you got the Italians watching it, the Portuguese are watching
it. And audience scores at the time, even though the movie was not loved by critics, it was basically 42% on, you know, basically on Rotten Tomatoes based on the reviews that were given in 95.
Right.
Right? But it got an A+ from audiences.
Okay, I can see. I can believe
that. So for surveyed audience members leaving Bad Boys 1, A+.
It's a ripping, roaring good time. Yes.
And
fun.
And let's just say Roger Ebert was championing this movie. He gave it thumbs up and actually defended the movie as one of his, one of the cop buddy cop movies that actually worked for him.
And in a way, we can't be surprised because Roger Ebert was married to a black woman. And I don't want to go back into the racist thing.
This is not bias here.
But he's always given black movies good ratings. If you look at the history of Roger Ebert, I think it's because he's banging a black girl.
Wow, this is controversial.
Rest in peace, Roger Ebert. I'm just saying. Let me tell you, I started this thing off saying that they weren't making this as a stereotypical black movie. They're making this as an action movie. But Roger Ebert, it was married to an African-American woman. I'm just saying. There is going to be a little bias.
Completely understand.
In the back of his head without him knowing it.
All right.
You know, I mean.
We're moving on now to 2003.
If I was dating a Filipino, I'd probably like Bruno Mars. You know, I'm just... Okay.
We're moving on to 2003, the premiere of Bad Boys 2. Now, we're not going to go as in-depth with Bad Boys 2.
No, that's not,
as Bad Boys 1.
Please not.
Because Bad Boys 2 is nonsense as far as a plot goes. Right. And you know what's so funny is that a lot of people... It's a polarizing movie to a lot of people because some people consider this the best movie.
Bullshit. Who's these people? Who's this? Liger Woods?
Oh, my.
Who's telling
I've
this shit?
I've heard multiple people, multiple times in bars. I've heard multiple people on podcast shows that I listen to think that Bad Boys 2 is better than the first movie.
Everybody can. I got something to say about her. They can all get the fuck out of here. All right. Now let me tell you this. Okay. Once again, I spent my entire day with Martin Lawrence. Okay. 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, 10:30-ish. Bad Boys 1's done. I needed an hour break. I needed an hour break to kind of cleanse a little bit.
Right.
I had my sandwich.
It's a lot of '90s.
I wasn't gonna eat again, so I had a kombucha, and I just kind of let it sit. Then I just Bad Boys 2. Get ready for Bad Boys 2. I see the time of this is 2 hours. What is this? 2 hours 29 minutes.
Pretty much.
I'm like, fuck my life. So then we go into this Bad Boys 2.
It has no business being that long.
No, it does not. And I'm getting myself mentally prepared. 5, maybe 10 minutes in, I'm like, oh, shit. I mean, what are they doing? Even in 10 minutes in, plot convoluted. No idea what's going on.
Right.
KKK is running around.
The movie has ADD.
Yeah,
like
clearly.
It's jump cuts, and it's moving so quickly, and... It's like a fever dream almost. It's like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. It takes a little while for you to like have it all sink in of like, okay, so this is a movie about ecstasy coming into Miami.
Right.
And it's being dealt by this crazy, you know, like Latin drug lord.
Right. It's an updated of cocaine. Like ecstasy is the new cocaine, I guess, in 2003.
With the most like over the top crappy performance by that guy, Jordi Mola, who plays the criminal. He plays Johnny Tapia.
Okay. Awful performance.
Right.
Awful. Martin Lawrence, I'm not going to go that far. But it was pretty bad. I was going to say Martin Lawrence did better. I didn't want to go and say that. But bad from the get-go, performance-wise, bad cut scenes.
Yeah, let's just give the trajectory at this point. You know, Will Smith has become the biggest movie star, arguably, in the world, you know, in 2003.
Right.
Martin Lawrence's star has faded quite significantly.
He went crazy.
It took... You know, basically the sequel for this should have came out. I mean, in theory, they wanted it out in 98, 99.
Makes sense.
But basically, Will was so busy and Will's paycheck was skyrocketing so much that they couldn't negotiate his pay and Martin's pay.
Right.
And scheduling wise, it just couldn't come together.
Right.
And I argue that's why it took, you know, as long as it did to even get the new one out. It
totally
took
17
years to get the new one out.
Totally makes sense.
You know, so you got a lot of egos here. You got a lot, you got Jerry Bruckheimer, you got Michael Bay right now, who's an in-demand director, right?
A lot has changed.
you know, Armageddon is huge.
Right. A lot has changed.
Yeah. So you got a director, you have a producer, and you've got two actors with just raging egos.
Right.
And you can see it on the screen. This movie is a male dick fest in the sense of, you know what I mean?
It a lot of fuck you, measuring, fuck you, fuck you there, fuck you too.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's a more brutal movie than the first one. They
really took it over the top.
It's way more violent. It's way more over the top.
Yeah.
And way too long. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. You know what this reminds me of? This, when I was watching about half an hour in, this reminds us of fucking Rise of Skywalker. What was Rise of Skywalker? Yep. It was a dick fuck. Two guys battling each egos out. JJ, Ryan Johnson. Too long. 100%. Too much shit going on. Trying to cover too many things. Paranoid of what people are going to think of it. They didn't know what they were going to do, so they just put everything in there. A clusterfuck of shit.
No, I want to tell you this. You know who wrote this movie?
Oh, who wrote this
movie? So, Ron Shelton. And I only mentioned Ron Shelton, director and writer of White Men Can't Jump.
Interesting.
The writer and director of Bull Durham.
Interesting, really?
Yeah, man. Arguably one of the better sports directors.
Well, they set that on fire, didn't they?
And I'm just shocked at that script. And I'm wondering, too, is like how much of Ron Shelton's script is on the screen and how much did Martin Lawrence and Will Smith throw it out and just go, yo, we're going to improvise, you know?
Think of it based off ego, based off what they did previously. Egos are now times 50.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they just scrapped it.
So take a guess in 2003 what Bad Boys 2 budget was.
Oh, had to have been triple at this point, right?
So take a wild guess.
$100 million.
$130 million to produce.
There you go.
So, obviously, the budgets are... I mean, obviously, the salaries, the actor salaries...
Blowing it all up. Yep.
Everything.
Everything
right?
Blowing up.
We'll talk about... Just talk about brief moments in the movie that are just ridiculous. We start the movie off with the KKK meeting, right?
Right.
All right. And then, you know, Martin gets shot in the ass, which just seems to be an ongoing joke in the movie. Right?
Whatever.
And then we have, like, a convoluted plot where... Marcus's sister comes into play, played by Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
Fresh off of Bring It On.
Yeah. Fuck.
Right? Gabrielle's looking hot in this movie.
This is the best she's ever looked.
She's smoking hot in this movie, and she's revealed to be having an affair with Mike Lowry.
Of course. Of course, Mike Lowry, you know, you gotta connect him somehow to this situation. At first, I thought it was going to be like they were going to keep it straight and not bang.
Right.
Just because, but... Right. You got to do it. It's him. Will Smith's right there. You might as well have Gabrielle bang him.
Right. Yep. And so, let's say this. Will Smith's put on about a solid 20 pounds of muscle for this movie from the first one.
This is
Martin
Will Smith.
Lawrence put on 20 pounds, but not muscle.
20 pounds of something else. 20 pounds of bologna. Because Will Smith, this is prime Will Smith, physique-wise.
Yeah.
And then this is probably prime psychotic mindset Martin Lawrence wise right here.
Yeah, you're right.
Because this is where he was off the deep end.
He was having problems, to say the least. Right. You know, and you can kind of see it on the screen. I mean, he's kind of in and out of, you know, scenes in the sense of like, he's kind of just sleepwalking through the
whole
movie.
Some don't look
man.
Right. Yeah, some don't look right.
Right. And basically, I don't want to even go into this convoluted plot, but it has to do with, you know, Haitian gang trying to rob the
shout out Fugees.
Try to rob the Colombians or the Cubans, excuse me.
It's all international war, bro.
And then you're tying in the Russian mob.
Yeah, the Russians are in there. Yeah.
The Russians are in there, so it's all convoluted. And, you know, at the same time you got the hijinks of, you know, are we gonna tell my brother that I'm dating you, right, Mike Lowry?
Right. Amongst that shit. Too much stuff going on.
Oh yeah.
Too much plot. I mean, this was basically the groundwork for Rise of Skywalker. I'm sure JJ probably is like, you know, how can I make a fucked up clusterfuck? Let's go put on Bad Boys 2, everyone. Let's watch that. See what they did there? I mean, it kind of mimics it because I couldn't follow what's going on.
Right.
Everybody's coming after him.
Right. And talk about racial stereotypes.
You got them all in there. They're all in there.
The Haitians.
Fuck it. You're saying I'm racist on this thing called Roger Ebert. Yeah, they're all doing their racist shit. I mean,
So you have
this was brutal to watch.
You have terrible like Haitian stereotypes, terrible Russian stereotypes, Cuban stereotypes. You know, you have a terrible extended scene that goes on for way too long where Martin Lawrence is running away from rats. in the mansion. Okay. And then rats are having sex. You remember this?
Right. I mean...
And it just felt so forced, and the humor in this felt so forced.
Oh yeah. When they're in the rent, when the TV right. store, and right. then they put on the porno by accident, right. and they're talking about gay stuff.
Right.
I mean, very forced. That was very forced.
Everything feels sticky, and right. it feels like contrived, but not in the good way to me, the contrived where the first one had it. You know, like right. we knew those right. bits, but they worked better. And it seemed like the two actors committed to making it more funny than this one. You know what I mean? And right. the scene that everyone states is the scene where Marcus's daughter gets picked up by the guy at the front door.
Right.
And, you know, Will Smith's dropping him. The N-word.
Right.
The most we've ever seen in Will Smith's life, at least in the public.
Did you have sex with a man? Do you want to? Is that a shot fired there? Okay, but Will Smith says that line. There was one funny line in the TV scene, though, where they have the big black woman.
Right.
But why are you guys showing no porno homo movies? Yeah. That's the only time I kind of smiled.
Right. And so we
porno
also,
homo yeah. movies. I never thought, wow, that has a good ring to it. Porno homo movies. Yeah. So that's again, that's it. Know, that's all I got right now. Bad Boys 2.
Well, you know, let's just go. It's just a mess of a movie. I can't really tell you one memorable action scene except the probably the car chase. The car chase where they're dropping cars off of the off of that trailer. I think that was a pretty cool scene, and that was integrated some cool CGI in it.
That was different. The ending where they all, you know, jumping ahead, but
right.
the ending was so over the top.
Right.
It was kind of fantastic. I have to give my only points.
Oh yeah, where they actually destroy a shanty town and they destroy so many people's lives.
So many lives.
Like their life is shitty enough. Right. They got these two guys just driving through their entire town.
Driving through the town, bazookaing everything, mansions, destroying.
Which they stole from Jackie Chan from Police Story back in the 80s. You know, that same scene. You know,
Hummer's involved. You know, it's always good to see a Hummer. And then,
Right. Then there's like the side plot is that they're hiding you know, the heroin or the ecstasy in the dead bodies. So we got to have dead bodies flying all over the place.
So it turns into Saw. We're cutting up the stomach, taking the thing out.
Will Smith's digging into corpses. Right. You know, Martin Lawrence is under the sheet with the big...
With the big tits.
Big tits.
Okay, ha ha ha.
Girl, right?
LOL like, there. Yeah, great shtick.
It's
cringy. I get it.
It's cringy.
It's really bad. It's really bad.
And then we wind up, with they go to Cuba. And they actually get assistance from, you know, off-duty
all the
CIA
renegades, right?
And
exactly.
DEA.
We're doing this ourselves, bro.
Right.
It's getting personal now, bro.
They raid Johnny Tapia's compound, right? And then it leads up to like that crazy chase, which I guess you enjoyed the mansion fight, which is insane. They level his mansion, right?
Taking everybody out, bazookas, everything. Cuban army. We don't give a shit. We're taking them all out.
They're fighting the Cuban army.
The Cuban fucking army is going after these renegade coppers. And they're taking them out because they got all the underground tunnels.
If this movie was real, we would never have come to a truce with Cuba.
That's it. No more Cuban cigars for anybody. And then, you know, you got the grandma with the shotgun. I thought they were going to shoot the grandma.
Right.
I'm like, wow, are they going to go that far? Because we got things chopping off and shit.
He punched her in the face.
Right. I was surprised by that. I thought they were going to shoot her. I thought they were going to shoot her based on what we've been seeing.
Right.
And then they kept the daughter away. But then the mansion blew up anyway. So the grandma and the kid are dead.
God.
So it doesn't matter.
The thing of this movie is giving me a headache.
Right.
And then it leads to the climactic scene in a minefield.
Okay.
Outside Guantanamo Bay.
If there was anything left that they didn't cover, let's throw in mines. And the mines have these little things that come out.
Right.
I didn't know that they had the little pricks that came out.
They pop up.
I thought they were like the flat ones that you step on it and then. You know.
This is high tech.
So then we got the high tech kind. And then they're all in there. And then Martin Lawrence, while they're in the mines, you see him. They do the Michael Bay slow motion thing. And he does a little flip over. And then you see a mine right there. So are we going to say Martin Lawrence takes a suicide or something? Because I thought
Martin Lawrence, doesn't someone take a bullet for somebody?
So Gabriel Union throws the gun
right
to the mine to set off the mine to blow him into pieces.
Right.
And then as they're doing it, Gabriel jumps away from the mine. Martin Lawrence jumps towards the mine.
Oh, okay.
So I was thinking, is this Martin Lawrence just being a dumb shit? And he's going, oh, you fucker. And then credits roll and then Martin Lawrence is dead. So
no.
I was just like, I didn't get it. I was just like, fuck, how many more minutes we got left for this movie?
Yeah, at this point, you're in like the 2 hour 20.
Yeah,
two hour
I was already done.
Point, and you're just like,
I had
this
my
movie is
rating.
Still going on.
Yeah.
Right? And man, what a mess. And then, of course, they shoot Johnny Tapia in the head, and he just falls right on a mine.
On the mine. And then kaboom, and then chop liver. That was it.
Then everyone's happy.
Right.
Either in an above ground pool, which keeps breaking.
Yeah.
Right? Jeez.
And they sing the song, and they don't know the lyrics to the song.
Right.
Ha, ha, ha. Wonderful.
Right. Credits and they improvised that one scene from the first movie, and then it became like the just like the lamest joke in the second, and even this new one where they just singing it all the time. And
right. We just know the chorus.
Oh,
ha,
man.
Ha, ha.
Yeah. Bad.
Fuck my life. 2003, Aaron will say.
What's the mic rating
okay.
for this?
So here we go. So you know how I get the reason why I didn't see Bad Boys 1?
Okay.
Reasons why 1995 or where I was as a person. Okay. So if we go to 2003, knowing that this movie came out, where I was in, I was DJing at the time. I just broke up with my girlfriend. When did this movie come out?
2003.
What month?
It came out. Good question. It came out
summer, probably.
July 18th of okay. 2003.
Okay. So I was ready to give my ex-girlfriend the heave-ho around then. So I was going through that. And then I was still DJing, but we weren't movie people. And there was more reason I wasn't going to go see a movie with her. And because of all of that, it was going to be leading me toward being single again. Once again, like 95, I did not want to see it. Because I could have easily rented the VHS mm-hmm. to watch Bad Boys 1 to catch up with the whole right. thing. So if I did see this in 2003, I'd probably be like, what the fuck? Because in 2003, we were kind of more mature then. Right. It was 10 years ago, 10 years later, right?
Right.
So I think it would be a what the fuck. Because right, 2020, Aaron is saying, fuck my life.
Okay.
I don't ever want to see that again. It was total rubbish. I would see maybe the ending fight scene, that ending blow up scene. But that's it. I cannot watch that again.
So what's the mic rating?
One mic.
What?
Fuck that shit.
So I'll say this. In 2003, I'd give this movie 2.5 mics. Right.
Okay.
2.5 months.
Okay. See.
It was flashy.
There you go.
It was flashy. You know. It was over bloated and long. I remember we leaped off the theater and go, man, that was too long. And
okay. Right.
And but I would say now in 2020, I give it 2 mics.
Okay.
2.
That's not that big of a drop.
Well,
I'm surprised to hear that from you.
I. You know what? I only don't let it drop into the ones is because the movie. Looks like from a cinematography aspect, it looks very slick. It looks cool. It'd be like another thing if this movie just looked like crap too. You know, we talk about the shitty editing and all that, which it is.
Right.
But you can't. The one thing you can't see about Michael Bay movies, they don't not look good.
They always look good.
They look really good. He's got a good eye.
Yeah.
He just has an ego that's out of control.
Correct.
And
that's
and,
where the one mic goes for me.
And that's
the cinematography. The script garbage.
It seems like Roger Ebert. See, you're saying he likes it. He gave this one a big thumbs down. Mm. Said it was one of the worst films of 2003.
You're still married to the black woman now?
And said that, I don't think they got divorced, man.
I'm sorry.
And
I'm just saying.
He said this movie is cruel and brutal and unnecessary. And who would like this movie? So,
well.
See, you can't. Say Roger Ebert is on the side.
Maybe he was going through a rough time. Maybe he was going through a divorce or something. Maybe they were going to couples therapy. I don't know. Maybe
so.
Kid problems.
It was trashed by the critics.
Okay.
It's currently at 23% on Rotten
Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Right?
Then there you go. That
but
says it all.
We go again to the cinema score. The people watching this movie in the theater. It went from an A+ with number 1 to just an A. So people like this movie.
It's the same people who like Transformers. Same people who like disaster movies. Same people like all that shit. They like these kind of dumbed down, blow up, show the upskirt,
right.
Slow motion. There's an audience for that.
You know, it was a modest success. I wouldn't say
how much
it
did
was,
this make.
So it off $134 million budget. It made barely its budget back in America. It made $134 million in America.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
$138 million in America. $138 million in America.
Okay.
But overseas. $273 million.
Oh, got it.
So it you know,
well, this thing played up to all the races.
This thing made, you know, 273, you know, like
okay, turn the profit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, excuse me, I said that wrong. It's $138 million in America, $134 million overseas. Whoa. Total gross of $273 million.
Total gross $273 million.
So
made its money back.
So it made its money back. They wanted a sequel and another one.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't get one for 17 years.
Okay, so what was the reason for that contract again problem?
Contract again with Martin Lawrence wanting, you know, high pay.
Right.
But even though his star was kind of faded.
Right.
Will Smith being one of the highest paid actors in the world.
Right.
And still in this point in the top three highest paid actors in the world post even this movie. Right, he was getting Oscar nominations for Ollie's, like so doing all this stuff.
Was that maybe you think he didn't want to carry out another Martin Lawrence movie anymore because Will Smith is so much up here, high. Martin Lawrence is so getting lower and lower and lower.
They're doing the talk show. They're doing the talk show circuit, and they keep kind of dancing around the question. They just, well, the script wasn't right, and this and that. No one watches Bad Boys for the script. I'll tell you that much.
Well, right.
Obviously, these guys didn't even work. They worked on the first and the second one without a script.
They improvised this whole Bad Boys too. There was no script.
So
there.
You don't tell. Don't give me that bullshit.
Yeah,
about,
we'll tell Shelton get out of here.
We're waiting. No, but I can't believe they got a talented guy like Ron Shelton, and then you know
they didn't use the script. Apparently,
they obviously didn't.
They did not. You
know? Let's just also talk about things that were spawned from this movies. From these movies, the Bad Boys soundtracks.
Hey, all right, shout out. Shake it like a tail feather.
The second movie, the first one had a fairly generic soundtrack, although they had some good songs. You know,
let's pull that.
We had Diana King, Shy Guy. All we right, had there the. You go.
Bad Boys 2 soundtrack. Right? You have let's it pull up? This up here.
Well, let's go Bad Boys 1 first. You want to go Bad Boys 1
okay.
first?
Okay, I'll search that now on the Apple right? Music. This is what I have currently. Let's look at Bad Boys soundtrack. Here we go. We got Money Fight? No, that's Money. Oh, sorry. I'm looking at Bad Boys for Life. Sorry. Hey, I'm new to this Bad Boys thing, okay, people? Shit. Okay, let's look at Bad Boys soundtrack, the original. We have Shy Guy, Danny King. We have the B-side. With Notorious B.I.G.
Right, 5050, the Here They Come. So I told that's you right. There's a Warren G song,
Me
so
Against
many
the
ways.
World, So Many Ways, Warren G.
Someone to Love, Babyface, and John B., the debut single from John B. was from
How
this
about
movie.
It? There you go. Shout out Sean.
Number one song. So this was a big soundtrack.
Big soundtrack, you know? Right.
The B-side from Jermaine Dupri, yeah, The Brat, and Notorious B.I.G., which prior to this soundtrack, you only could get on vinyl, I believe, or that's maxi correct. Single.
Yes,
right?
Maxi singles for the
win. Look, so weird. You had Clouds of Smoke from Call of the Wild, Soul Assassins. Really bizarre soundtrack, right?
So I'm seeing a lot of Bad Boy Records stuff. Sorry, I'm scrolling.
No, it's okay.
I got Puff Daddy shit going on right now. Shout out Bad Boys Entertainment. Bad Boys 2 then.
But Bad Boys 2 was executive produced by Puff Daddy. And right. he was the executive music producer for the film,
right?
And you know, big soundtrack at the time, man.
You got Jay-Z's on there.
You have the song with P. Diddy, Lenny Kravitz, and Pharrell. You got Jay-Z on there. You got the big Shake Your Tail Feather song, which was a number one.
We got
hip-hop
Loon on
song.
This. Relax Your Mind by Loon. Yeah. You guys remember Loon on there?
Loon, yes, wow. From Harlem World.
Well, MOP's on here.
MOP, Just Blaze.
Wow, what a hot
you
soundtrack.
Yeah,
huh?
I know Freeway you guys don't listen to that tonight. Crack. Shout out Petey Crack.
Yeah, Freeway. Justin Timberlake's on this?
Yeah, man.
Wow, what a soundtrack. Huh, everyone? Don't you just want to go in your car and just play that instead of.
Look at this. You have Mary J. Blige.
I mean,
you got. Let's talk about. You Bad have The Band. Remember Bad Boys?
The Band, yes. Yeah,
Dylon.
I'm shutting the studio down. Cambodian Breast Milks.
Yes.
I got it, yes.
Yeah, Notorious B.I.G., 50 Cent. Snoop Dogg and Loon. I mean,
what
Fat
a soundtrack,
Joe.
Huh?
I mean, this is a
fantastic.
Big, this is a big. Big album, man.
Rap music for the win.
This was pretty popular. I mean, I think.
Oh,
it went,
was it?
I think it went gold or platinum.
It had to have gone platinum. This is all the hits on here. All the hits. CD for the win. Guaranteed. Thigh Records buying them up right now. Hungry Ear, buy them up.
But yeah,
this is a good lineup.
This is you could definitely see that Puff's hands were in it for the soundtrack. And then I don't know if you know this or if you remember, you had a PlayStation 2. They had a Bad Boys game called Bad Boys Miami Takeover that came out in 2004.
Good Lord.
Shout out to anyone who owned that game.
DJ Liger Woods.
You were definitely by yourself.
Liger Woods got two copies of this. What kind of game was it? Like a shooter? Was it a driving game?
Oh, it's here. Let me.
Like,
let
what
me,
was the what was the style of game
let me,
this
let
was?
Let me look it up.
Was it a role-playing game?
Let me look it up.
Good Lord.
Bad Boys Miami Takedown.
It had to be a shooter, right?
Made by Activision. Oh, no, Crave Entertainment.
Crave. Sounds like a restaurant.
Blitz Games and Crave Entertainment.
Does it say like the style of game, like a shooter, gun, race car game, like RPG action?
You guys will have to go to YouTube and look for Bad Boys video game clips because they don't show the gameplay.
A lot of homework for you guys listening, huh?
Let's just say, but looking at the reviews from IGN, GameSpot, GameZone, everyone thought it sucked. Yeah. It got multiple 1 out of 10s.
No movie adaptation video game ever works. So it runs the continuing the trend.
Let's just say it's got so many 1-star reviews. There you go. You know, It's impressive how bad it is.
I'm sure we can find that on Twitch, right, Kale? No? I'm sure we can find a Twitch live stream of Bad Boys the Game.
Yes. Yeah. It was voted in the number 3 for the top 10 worst movie games of all time.
Wow. Okay, I'm looking that up then. I'll look that up.
But it's by Game Informer, I believe.
That'd be a good YouTube to watch. Just watch like somebody review that shit. Okay.
But anyways.
Homework for me.
So we did this whole review. If you're still with us, thank you very much. you must really like Bad Boys, or you like I said, you must like our voices.
Don't like either.
But are you going to watch Bad Boys 3? Okay, that this movie is in the cultural conversation, breaking all box office records. They've already greenlit a Bad Boys 4, which I don't know why they didn't save the Bad Boys 4 life for Bad Boys 4. Kind of, it seems like it was right in front of their face.
Wow. But I didn't even realize that.
I mean, it would have made more sense, right, guys? Hashtag marketing.
God, that's the suicide letter right there. Why didn't they just keep the 4 for 4? Yeah.
You know, our suggestion is, why don't we come up? We'll use the 4, but how's the next one? It'll be Bad Boys. For real? With a question mark?
You have no choice but to do that now. Wow. Holy shit.
How about this one? I think if Aaron named it, he would name it Bad Boys : For God's Sakes.
Well, but then we get, you'd be too, like, you know, too religious. We'd get all these groups coming after. Okay, based off of this, and based off that I spent literally 6 hours of my life.
Right, because we're talking about sandwich breaks in between.
I had one sandwich break, then I had like a protein bar break, and then I had kombucha throughout.
Wow. Bad Boys 2, one of those movies where you look forward to taking a piss.
I took 3. And I had to feed the cats, you know, I had all kinds of shit I had to do. So 6 hours of my life because of that, and I was trying to, you know, see, would this justify me going to see Bad Boys 3? I was really playing back and forth with this. It's still in the theater.
It's still doing well. I believe it was number one again.
So why don't we do this then?
I think 3 weeks in a row. So
now you've seen it. Of course,
I have seen it. I'm not going to sell you what I think of it until we talk about it together.
So I will do this. I will take one for the team. I will go before February 4th. All right. The next show, we are going to review Bad Boys 3 on February 4th because from now, Thursday the 30th, today's the 30th, right?
Right.
From now till Tuesday, I will find some act of God way time to go to the theater by myself because I know ain't nobody going to come with me this shit. To go see this, I'm going to probably sneak Chubby's Burger in.
Get your seat in the back.
FF, that's the seat. You sit right by the toilet. I'm going to probably need it. How long is Bad Boys 3?
Over 2 hours. Clocking in just over 2 hours.
Holy God. All right. So I'm going to go sneak in food. Shout out Consolidated. And I'm going to go take FF if it's still in that theater. It's going to be the theater 10 or theater 9 for people knowing what FF is. I'm going to go before Tuesday. We're reviewing it live on Tuesday with yourself. You will then reveal your review to me. I will give you my review. That's it.
Yeah.
February 4th.
And it seems like, you know, people are enjoying it. Critics actually enjoyed this one. It's actually getting decent reviews. You know, obviously the fans of the movie, I guess, really enjoy it. I mean, it's number one three weeks in a row.
Let's talk about the fans now. Let's talk about who are the fans of this movie. Now, it's kind of a good timing that they released it in 2020. Right. Because who's going to see it? Well,
It's our age. It's nostalgic.
We have money.
When I was in the theater, it was all guys in their mid 30s to 40s.
Exactly.
It was older. It was an older crowd.
Exactly. We know a lot of guys who are stuck in the 90s, and they probably went apeshit when they seen this movie come back out.
Yep.
And they're probably maybe seeing this more than once. You never know. You know,
bust out the cross colors, go check it out.
Right. And you figure, okay, if a guy is like 40 in 2020, let's say 40, 45, he's probably got maybe a son or daughter, maybe 10.
Right.
Kind of a borderline of taking that kid at that age to see this movie.
Right.
So then you got these guys taking their kids to this movie. Money. More money, more money, more money. And that's exactly. So I think it's good timing
and
for this.
As we all know, Hollywood loves sequels.
Correct.
And you know what America loves? Nostalgia.
Correct. Bingo.
So we already got the 80s wave with Stranger Things and all that stuff. Now we got the 90s wave.
Correct.
You know what I mean? So...
So how much did this make here so far? Where are we at? 200 million at least on this movie?
How much
are they making? Bad Boys for Life. How are they doing?
Bad Boys right now is currently worldwide at 225 million in its third week. It's still making that money. This is off a $90 million budget.
I just pulled it up. See,
so they made it for less money, and it's making just crazy profit.
They turned a profit.
Right. And it's not even done with its theatrical run. Hmm. If I had to guesstimate, I'll probably say this movie will probably finish clocking out around 260, 265. And I can see why Will Smith is greenlighting the new one. And I'll say with this one, and before you go watch it, going with this knowledge, with Bad Boys for Life, Will Smith is a producer. Yeah. He was very involved in the script development.
Yeah.
And very much involved in like a lot of the aspects of the film.
Right.
So it definitely, you know, it might no Michael Bay.
No Michael Bay in this one, really?
No. You're going in with first-time directors. A team of directors.
Who?
They're called Adil and Bilal.
The bullshit.
I swear to you. They're actually students of...
Wait, Bilal, what, the singer, Bilal?
You heard of that show, Snowfall? On FX.
It's basically about
the history of like the cocaine crack culture in California.
Okay, got it.
These guys were students of John Singleton.
Got it.
And they're of the John Singleton school as Adil and Bilal.
Adil and Bilal.
So
I looked up Adil and Bilal. Look at this.
They're Belgian. They're Belgian film.
They're Belgian.
They're Belgian.
That don't sound like no Belgian.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they went to film school. And basically, you know, they were actually the ones that were developing Beverly Hills Cop 4.
Oh, well.
So with Eddie Murphy. Well. And then when Beverly Hills Cop 4 went under, basically the buzz was about these guys. They were actually working with John Singleton on Snowfall. They directed a couple episodes.
Well, shit.
And then they went on Deal to take over this project. And Will Smith picked these guys.
All right. Hopefully they're not Milli Vanilli.
I would say this. Hey, the movie.
Deal and Bilal. It's
the movie.
Catchy.
You're going in, and it's not as ADD as the Michael
Bay. Well, no Michael Bay, that's a plus.
Yeah.
The budget is lower, so this seems like it's more efficient and not a cluster, so that's a plus too.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I'm gonna go into this one. 2 hours, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring food and get ready to piss. So, yeah, that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to watch it. I will watch it. February 4 will be the reveal.
Yes.
What are we clocking in on this show? How long has this thing been? It's been
it's not that bad.
Hour 20?
It's not that bad. It's still shorter than Bad Boys 2.
Oh, God. Let's not use that as the marker for these recordings. Okay. Let's get out of here. I haven't eaten yet.
Anyways, thank you guys. So, shout out to all the people listening.
Yeah, shout out to you guys listening to this. If you're listening to this, it's time to do a test. Now, we've done this for Old Foot's Review, 93... Best of 93, where that show was like 10 hours long, right? So here's a quiz for all you guys, okay? Anybody that's still listening to this, okay? You guys ready? Now, in relation to Martin Lawrence, all right? In relation, we got cats up on the roof, cat on a hot tin roof. That's not the question. If we go with Martin Lawrence and if we go with Def Comedy Jam, do you remember a show on HBO hosted by Rosie Perez that had hip-hop acts on it performing? Red Man, Onyx, Black Moon, they were all on there. Buju Banton. It was hosted by Bernie Mac on HBO. If you can tell me that and reveal me the answer, you DM Sleep Times Over IG, you get a shirt. I will get you a shirt, a Sleep Times Over shirt. You heard that, Sean Iman? Because I know you're going to be listening to this right now. Don't Google this, you fucker. I want you to legitimately tell me. So that's the quiz question, everyone. Hour 20, is this?
Yeah.
Fuck. Shit. All right.
That's a lot of Martin Lawrence.
All right. Fucking God. I need to,
All right.
I need a
Thank
drink.
You guys.
Thank you all. We're out. Get out of here. Bad boys. What you gonna do? Shake it tough, fella. Let's play. Because I heard that song way too many times today. Okay. When you were eight and you had bad treats. To school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? By not Nelly. It's by who? Shake Your Tail Feather by
Murphy Lee.
Murphy Lee.
St. Lunatics.
That's right. Murphy Lee. Loading up. Let's go. Ride it out. Bad Boys 2, the soundtrack. Let's go. Yeah.